Welcome to Karate in the Garage. I'm Corey Cope.
I'm Freddie Loth.
It's returned.
It's back.
The Son of March Madness.
Or To Be or Not To Be 2. The sequel.
Which makes it really funny because it wouldn't. All the sequels that we got
right
last year when we in our inaugural themed month of To Be or Not To Be or March Madness, depending on how you want to call it. If you notice, remember a lot of those, these smaller movies that we end up getting?
Yes.
They always have like these really long subtitles.
Right.
Like Martial Law, or what the fuck it is.
Sure. Snake Eater 3, Return of the Snake Eater 3.
And our movie today has no exception either.
No, it is not. But it's not a sequel.
We chose this one. This is our starting point.
Our Eye of the Tiger, if you will.
And boy, I'll say this up front on Main Street before you even dive into this episode that informed us that to be picked after we both watched this is like, man, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. Anyway, DOA, Dead or Alive, we have today, directed by Corey Yun,
the
martial arts legend that he is, from Fist of Fury from 72 all the way to he did all the wire work on the Jet Li's American movies. And he got dipped his toe a little bit in some co-produced, co-distributed American and Chinese work. But this is probably the most mainstream from a director standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. This is as close to a Hollywood movie as I think he ever directed. I mean, it is a Hollywood movie, is it? But it feels more like a Hong Kong movie to me, right?
It does. It definitely has that sensibilities, but you know, Dimension's got their name all over it. But here's what's interesting. The international side is done by Summit. So, you know, that's pretty American, dude. You know?
Yeah. I mean, for all intents and purposes, this is his crossover film, or this was his reward for, you know, all those years of, you know, making all those kick-ass action movies.
Yep.
And, you know, there's nobody better that this wire work than Corey, dude.
No. Corey Yun does fantastic work. And for somebody who has the filmography that he does in his homeland, for him to come here when Jet was starting to blow up as crossover into American cinema, action movies, kind of starting around with, I think Lethal Weapon 4 was the first American movie he was in, wasn't it?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it sounds right.
All the other movies that Joel Silver produced like with him.
The One and, you know, the many, many, many.
Cradle to Grave. And the other one, the Romeo and Juliet crossover. What the hell was that again? Romeo Must Die. Because it's Corey Yun, this movie is chock full of wire work.
Dude, right? Like almost from the go.
Right. What was I saying to you about it when I was watching? Because I think I watched it ahead of you.
Oh, you said, man, this has got an awful lot of Charlie's Angels in it.
Yes. All the things that McG nicked from all these classic Corey Yun movies and stuck them in his first Charlie's Angels movies. If you like those action sequences in those movies, that's what this is all the way through.
Yes.
All the way through. So if you dig those set pieces and those crazy fight sequences and some smooth as silk wire work.
Right.
Oof, man, this is your movie.
Yeah.
It is a video game adaptation. So grain of salt when I say this is a good time.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is, dude, I was just looking up this. I was looking to see if Corey Yun had anything to do with the Charlie's Angels thing. I don't see it right off the bat. But no. I mean, down to like almost even the music cues and such, you know, the sort of the way it's scored, it has a very sort of Charlie's Angels. But I feel like they're, you know, they were sort of, that's what they were going for. And right. And speaking of angels, I mean, good Lord, dude. I mean, they couldn't mm-hmm. have picked five more. I mean, if I was 15 when I saw this, I don't know that I would ever come out of the bathroom.
Yeah. If you were 15 when this movie came out, you would have been totally into the video game. And the video game, I mean, this is literally a just stepped right off the television screen kind of thing where is it just the scantily clad costumes? It's just they got the right women to play these parts because if you played the games, it fits well. Now, if you play the games also, then you know that if you make it an adaptation of it, that's something else too. I was really, really happy about the choice. Because you know when you see a movie like Street Fighter with Jean-Claude?
Oh, right.
And they take something simple as two dudes or a dude and a girl fighting. which is all those games were, make it into a, put a story around it. Now, Steven D'Souza, that's his fault because he's the one that wrote it. But this one movie, this is it. It's a fighting movie. The quote unquote story here is about as thin as they get. And that's good because who gives a shit?
Well, the story's kind of silly, right? When it gets into the third act and you discover what the story really is, you're like, oh, really? I mean, right. It does. But again, that's the video game aspect of it. So I don't really have any problem with it. But everything up until that moment, here's the thing. It's Enter the Dragon, right? It's right. Literally.
Yes.
You're all invited to come and fight on the island.
Yes.
You know, I mean, so, you know, and it's at base, that's what it is. But I mean, what's fun about this movie is the sense of humor. I mean, the girls all, dude, all four of the main girls, they all have their own identifiable personality and none of them are doing what the other one's doing. No. Literally, you know, they're all doing their own and they're all doing it well.
Right.
I don't think at the time, maybe Jamie Presley was the most well-known of people in this film, I would say.
Right. And yeah, but when you were talking about that, we were trying to figure out what at point my name is Earl in this. And this is still 2 or 3 years before that. And at this point, she still had like 30 something credits.
Yeah. This is after Joe Dirt and...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. She was already, to me, like, I mean, I already had seen her in a ton of stuff before right. this movie. Devin Aoki, you know, who we all had seen the year before in Sin City, right? Mm-hmm. And for those of you who might remember Too Fast, Too Furious, she's in that too.
Yes.
But I mean, but then we get, you know, Sarah Carter, who, I mean, is, I think she was just in The Flash. The latest version of The Flash, but she, you know, she is another, you know, she was a Canadian actress who had been in a ton of stuff, and Holly Valance, who I think, what did you say she was on? She was on Entourage and been a bunch of other things, but
yeah,
I mean, for me, like she was in Prison Break. That's the other thing she was on for a while before this. That was her stepping stone into this was Prison Break. I couldn't remember the name of the damn thing for a second. But I think she was in Taken the year after this, right? Isn't she?
She's one of the girls in the...
Yeah. She's...
That's for sale.
Yeah, I think so. She's got a few scenes there with Maggie Grace, but all the girls are fantastic in this and it's super fun. I mean, the plot's a little silly, right? It's like, hey, there's a tournament to find the best fighters on the planet for what was the prize? $1 million, which seems so not really $1 million. Really?
Even in 2006.
It wasn't $1 million didn't seem like a lot of money. For
the prize is $10 million.
$10 million. Okay. Still not enough to take that kind of ass whooping.
No. Even again, $10 million in 2006 still sounds funny.
But what I love about it is it's everybody fighting everybody. It's just like it's guys, girl fighters, you know. And you know, so it's set up that way, right? And then we find out later that Eric Roberts as Donovan, you know, dude, I you know how much I secretly love Eric Roberts, or maybe it's not a secret. But you know, when Eric Roberts shows up, the first time I saw this, when Eric Roberts showed up, I was like, holy shit, this movie can't get any better.
Yeah. And I don't, by the way, I'm going to hit this now. I don't care if you have the most perfect, I don't care if you have Neil Diamond hair from 1982. Your hair is not better than Eric Roberts' hair in this movie.
No, it's not. Your hair is not better than Eric Roberts' hair in this movie. And I think it's real.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
That's not totally. A wig. That's his hair, dude.
Let's talk about that. I mean, I kind of sidebarred you. I said this to you aside for a second, but we mentioned all these women in there in this. And like three or four of them are already on Entourage. You mentioned one of being on Entourage. Yes. Jamie played herself.
Right.
Sarah's in it. Not Devin, but somebody else was in it too. But so was Eric Roberts playing himself.
Yes.
He's the one that gives him the shrooms. And he goes up to Joshua Tree together. Dude, you got to think, because that Entourage is like, what, 2 years old at this point?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you wanted, if you were a young actor or young performer trying to get on and trying to make your way, you were trying to get yourself as just like a little background or a single line on Entourage. So I'm not surprised that so many people that are on Entourage are in this movie. Like, you know, the plot is thinner than thin, just like a video game. It's a fighting game. There's nothing to it.
Right. It's just to set us to get to the next level. That's the only thing the plot does is it moves us from one fight to the next fight, which is great because the fights are really, really, all of them are fun. There's not a bad one in the bunch. One of the goofiest ones, but it is fun is when Kevin Nash and Jamie Presley fight on the raft.
Each other in the water.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, dude. Cause that's the thing. And if you played the game, you totally get the situation. Cause some of the lines that they both have are the same lines that you have in the game when you end up having to fight each other. The people that wrote this knew what they were working
yeah,
with.
Yeah, totally.
It's a total love letter to the game. And if you enjoy the game, then this is you. I can't see you hating on this movie.
No.
And if you come into DOA Dead or Alive with this cover staring you back and you'd say it's not entertaining, you went into it way too seriously.
Or you don't have a pulse. I'm not sure what you're asking.
It's corny. It's supposed to be. Even, okay, Eric Roberts can scare the piss out of you if he wants to with the performance.
Yeah.
Even in this window of time, it didn't matter where he's at any stage of his career. The fact that you're chuckling at how goofy he is, it just lets you know that I know that he knows what he's in and he never takes himself seriously.
No, he certainly does not. He's playing that version. He knows exactly what he's doing. What's great about this movie, and it's funny because, you know, in the world of like, we were talking not long ago about movies based on video games. Right. That was during failed franchises. Was that when it was? I think we had brought up Doom and some other things.
Yeah. At one point we were going to do Doom. And then
people don't give this movie enough love, I don't think. I don't think it gets mentioned. But because this movie is better than Mortal Kombat, Double Dragon. It's better than all those movies.
Right.
The ones that were made up until 2006. This to me is like the best of any of those movies, man.
Totally.
As far as being able to walk, to get through it, the performances, it knows what it is. Nobody's trying to, you know, convince me that this is a James Bond movie and they don't try to be a James Bond movie.
No.
But the thing that carries this movie is all of that, all the fights and all the wire work and all of, you know, and the actresses, everybody, not even just the actresses, but like Kane Kasugi shows up. Yep. It's Ryu. He's fucking great. I mean, you know, he doesn't have a, you know, and again, he's playing kind of what we haven't seen him play before, right? Because he's usually so serious and sullen in things.
Right.
But not in this.
No.
In this, he's, you know, he's funny. He's charming. He's a little goofy, a little nerdy, but still a badass.
And he's great too. I mean, his apple doesn't fall far from the tree from his dad.
Right.
So it's not a surprise to see how good he is in the movie. Like when he first showed up, I'm like, oh shit, because he's not on the box, because the box is they're selling the sex.
Right. Certainly are, man.
Right. Speaking of sex and cracks.
Good Lord. Yeah, man. There's more butt crack and crotch shots in this movie than there are in a Chippendales video. So bad.
And we're talking about women's cracks, not dudes, because you mentioned Chippendales.
And dude, like, and everybody's hard-bodied and beautiful in this movie, and it's such a lot of fun. I'm talking about male and female, right? Like, this is eye candy for humans. You know, I mean, if your thing is athletic people cracking wise, you know, and fighting each other, there's no reason you shouldn't like this movie.
Just the thing about the video games is that every fighter has at least one line pre-fight and a post, I just kicked your ass fight.
Yep.
Kind of, and they have a whole bunch of lines and they're all used in the movie. And they're super corny at times and super funny. But again, if you take yourself too seriously, this is not the movie for you. But I think that if you just set your feelings aside about what you think this is and just watch it, you know, if you take it too seriously, you won't recognize that it's a well-crafted movie. It never loses sight of what it is.
No.
And it never tries to be more than it is. For most video game movie adaptations, they try to be grandiose if you need to. I'm like, no, come on.
Right.
The built-in user audience is right there playing video games.
Right. And they kind of fall right in line with the keep it simple, stupid thing, right? It's right. Like, look, the way they introduce all four of the girls is great. Like everybody gets their own introduction, their own little prelude, and then they receive their invitation to the island.
Right.
And like, what is this? You know, and they know immediately what it is. And then we get to find out. Then you cut to the plane where, you know, they're all flying. It's Helena who's doing the video, who says, okay, now under their seat, there's a parachute. This is how you bail out now to hit the island. And you're like, what the fuck? Right.
Right. Because the rest of the contestants don't know that Helena is Eric Roberts' daughter.
Well, not Eric Roberts' daughter. Her father was Eric Roberts' partner.
Well, but I mean that, but that's how they present it.
Right.
No, you're right. That's right. I'm getting it mixed up with the Kevin Nash storyline. See?
Yes.
Even a movie that has no plots convoluted sometimes.
Yeah. Well, there's just a lot of characters at the beginning because it's, you know, it's a tournament. So, you know, not unlike Enter the Dragon, you know, you got to weed through some people in the first couple rounds.
Yes.
You know, rather than people fighting to the death, you just get eliminated, right? And you're out of the tournament, but they let you stay and, you know, enjoy the hedonistic party atmosphere that's going on the island during this fighting tournament because, you know, why wouldn't they?
Right.
I mean, the funniest thing in this movie is the shoe polish in Kevin Nash's beard. I just need to say that before I forget. And for those of you who don't know who Kevin Nash is, I'm ashamed of you.
Yes. There's a couple other actors in this that made me chuckle because, well, one of them fits right in line with what he does here. And that's Steve Howey playing the nerd that runs this whole...
Playing Weatherby, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's super goofy. This is right after... Reba McEntire show. Reba had been canceled. And this is the first. This is in between this and when he gets Shameless on Showtime, the American version. He's great. But the one that threw me off and it took me, I had to like, not only is his performance not normal for Brian J. White.
Oh, yeah.
They got him in the green mohawk too. It was throwing me off. I'm like, and I couldn't figure, I mean, literally, I had to like look it up. I'm like, who is this? And I'm like, Corey, how did you not get this? Yeah, he's great. And I mentioned him before when I was like off the cuff talking about Cabin in the Woods.
Yep.
You know, he's the guy first day into the job in Cabin in the Woods. And he's a great character actor. He always kind of steps in, Stomp the Yard. I think it was like the first big thing he was in, but he's in some smaller things too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, remember he played T-Rex in Mr. 3000.
Yep.
With Bernie Mac. That's right. Yep.
He certainly did. And he's also in The Family Stone, weirdly enough. Right. For those of you who've seen The Family Stone, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's great. And if you see The Family Stone, then you actually know what his character is or have an idea what his character is on that show.
Dude, he's great. Like the scenes between him and Jamie Presley are hilarious.
Yeah.
Again, it's funny too, because that mohawk and that it took me a minute to recognize him too. I was like, who the fuck? He looked so familiar, but I just couldn't put two and two together.
Yeah.
And then I had to like go to IMDb and I had to like zoom and then I had to start scrolling through pictures until I found one that looked remotely. I was like, oh, duh. And also he was in one of my favorite shows. He was Agent Woods on Burn Notice.
Yeah.
That was, you know. So anybody Burn Notice fans out there, you'll know.
What's great is because in the game, his character, Zach, he's a DJ as well as a fighter. And when he's like in serious mode, he's like, he's a really, really well-dressed suited guy, but they never get into that bullshit. He's just the DJ version of it. Like, keep in mind, these other live games got up to like part 6, part 7, something like that. So you've seen a lot of iterations of Zach over the years, but classic Zach is the green mohawk. So that's why he's got the green mohawk. So.
Exactly.
And again, and he's chewing scenery like everybody else is. Again, I don't know if they just had a family style dinner and they're all sitting around, but everybody like knew exactly what they were supposed to be doing.
You know, it's a video game and everybody's playing it bigger than life and it totally works. Nobody's upstaging the person that they're in the scene with. Like I said, everybody's doing their own heavy lifting and it's cool. You know, across the board from Eric Roberts on down to Steve Howery, to Brian White, to Kevin Nash, you know, because it's funny because wrestlers, sometimes you don't know what you're going to get, but I thought Kevin Nash was pretty controlled and like, you know, he was pretty good on camera. He wasn't too big for the room.
Yep.
You know, that, I think this might've been the first movie I had seen him in. Cause this is a couple years before John Wick and, you know, he's been in a bunch of other stuff and I was already familiar with him from his days in the, or WCW with Razor Ramon. We should talk about Natasha Mouthy too, dude. Like,
yeah,
she's got a big part. And dude, I'd never seen her with purple hair. I didn't recognize her at first. I was like,
Neither did I. It was super trippy. And she's, I know what it was. I'm trying to think about, when did I talk about Lake Placid on this show? It's when Joey and I tried to do an episode of Lake Placid.
Right.
We were trying to... And it got scrapped.
Yep.
I can't remember exactly the reason, but it just kind of fell apart. We were like, I don't know. Maybe I can't remember what it was. But, you know, she's also in Halloween Resurrection.
Well, she was in Elektra. She's Typhoid in Elektra.
Yeah.
Which was like the year before this, I think. Right. So she probably came off that into this. What's crazy is the common thread that runs through a lot of these things. It's funny. Like every one of these people have been in a movie with Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Right. Or there's some connection to Corey Yun in another, from another movie. So I'm thinking probably like when he was casting this, you know, he was already familiar with these and he's like, he knew that these people were totally could do the wire work that he wanted to do, you know? Right. Cause that's a consideration definitely when you're casting is because you got to double these people. So that they've got to be fairly athletic and fairly capable of at least right. doing, you know, I'm not even say 50%, but at least being able to pull off like 30 to 40% of it so that, you know, it's not 100% your stunt person, you know, it doesn't turn into my favorite thing in the world is sitting, I'm going to get you sucker when,
yeah.
When we see the stunt man's where, you know, it's, he's supposed to be fighting a woman and we yeah. look and they cut back, he's got a mustache and yeah. you know, that old gag. So,
no, I mean, it helps for a lot of things too, is like everybody is super athletic. Natasha is, I mean, she's a former ballet dancer. So her kind of comfortability with her body and what it can do is lends itself to wire work, even though she doesn't have a lot of wire yeah. work in it, but to the fighting, it's super elegant with the choreography. That's, I mean, that's the key here. It's like all the performers in this are
capable yeah. and they're capable totally.
Yeah. yeah. Like it's like you said, it's not just being the willingness. There's a capability you have to have there too. I don't want to overlook the fact that Paul W.S. Anderson is the main producer of this movie.
Yes. It totally makes sense. Like if you're familiar with his films, you have no problem believing that. I was going to say, it also kind of has a Spy Kids vibe to it.
A little bit.
Like when they first meet Eric Roberts and they're all standing down there looking up at the, you know, and when he's first introducing himself at the island, I flashed on like a little bit of Spy Kids. Yeah. Just the sort of, at you know, that kind of the hokum that sort of goes along with it in a good way.
Yeah. I never felt any point along the way too, is like sometimes with movies like this, and I don't mean adaptations, video game adaptations, but I mean movies that have tech in it, they're very much locked into whatever somebody thought was cutting edge tech, like we did with Disclosure.
Right.
It was corny even back when that yes. came out. But this, I don't feel that. And it,
no, honestly, not at
when
all.
When you have a video game like this, and at this point, I forget how many sequels of the game you've had released at this point. You can't have a movie based on a video game and not be mindful of that while you're designing your movie. Because it needs it. And I think this is when we were starting to see a lot of that too, where lots of motion graphic artists were starting businesses up on set so they could create these graphics that actually looked good inside a control room or some, you know, DEF CON 5 room or some bullshit. What you're seeing on a computer screen, this is believable. It isn't, you're not being spoon-fed. Like there's like not a whole bunch of exposition telling you what it is. It's just 3 key points you know about this and that's it. And if you ever looked at a computer before, then you're not going to get lost and they don't try to over-explain stuff. Again, the movie knows what it is. And even when it comes to the little things like that, you're not going to get lost. It's not a movie you get lost in unless you're really into just enjoying watching hot looking people fight, because that's what this is.
Yeah. Look, and if I was a 15-year-old kid, I'd never come out of the bathroom. Yes.
What's our equivalent from when we were 15? What's the equivalent to this?
Never coming out of the bathroom now? I don't know.
No. No, the problem was that when we were kids, they didn't give us a PG-13 movie like this.
No,
stuck in R-rated movies and we saw
yeah.
Hot Dog the movie.
Yeah, or,
you know, Fraternity Vacation.
Porky's or whatever.
Or Porky's.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got our movies different ways where that's how we got them. When we were kids, at that age, the audience was just 15-year-olds. With this, it's 15-year-olds that play video games, and that's their audience.
Right.
And I get it. I totally get it.
I'm still going to... My favorite sequence in the movie, and I don't know why, but it's the one, and it still got me the same way it did. It's our introduction to Christy, right? When the FBI, they've got her in a room, and she's wrapped in a sheet, and right. she's like, throw me my bra. And she throws it up in the air, and
yeah.
she kicks... Yeah, just...
Dude, that shot alone, I'm like going, okay...
Like, right? Like, I mean, you know,
Yeah.
I'm in from that moment on. Like, I mean, I was already in, but like that moment sealed it. Like the rest of the movie could have been terrible and I would have been like, well, I'll just go back and watch the first 12 minutes.
Yeah.
But the movie's a lot of fun. And again, there is so much going on choreography wise in some of these bigger moments, like when Kasumi, when she's leaving, when she's getting ready to leave and the entire army is standing there and her and Ayane are going to fight. That rivals anything that you see in Crouching Tiger or Hero or any of those. I mean, it's right. A big moment.
Right.
It's funny. This is like a $20 million movie.
Right.
They probably shot in Hong Kong. So, it's like a $50 million movie. And where did they shoot this all? Yeah, they shot this all in China, Thailand.
All over the place. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were shot in several locations, but...
But yeah, still, $21 million at that time making this movie there, that's a lot of money. And it shows. They really, it's all on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's funny. I don't know where this level of movie, I don't know where this exists now.
Yeah, we just saw an article recently in the Hollywood Reporter talking about, we might see a resurgence of mid-level movies. And this is not exactly this tone of it, but this kind of budget. But something we were talking about, and we didn't really get into it recently, about Godzilla Minus One, about how everybody's looking towards that director now because he did so much with the visual effects and with a limited VFX crew. And of course, I mean, the man's claim to fame is like he is a visual effects soup and has been for decades. So he knows how to make that work. So the idea here is that the same thing with Corian is like this dude is decades been doing wire work and martial art movies for decades. That's why he was able to get so much out of the movie and shooting where he shot it. Like you said, it stretched out to a good, probably the equivalent of 50 million stateside. It's solid, dude. It's like what I kind of chuckled at when you mentioned it in the beginning. It's kind of like, seriously, once you settle into the corniness, maybe usually by the second or third character introduction, like you know what it is. And like when you have Christie's moment where she throws her bra up in the air while she's in the hotel room and kind of like does that thing. And then all of a sudden she's wearing the bra. It was pretty great.
I mean, there's just a lot of clever visual, like, they really just took the fight choreography like to another level, especially for, and this movie, like, again, there's nobody in this movie who's not having fun. I guarantee it. They were probably very sad when this movie wrapped, when they called camera wrap on the last day of, the four girls being there together, Right. My favorite, I love the end too. They set it up perfectly for a sequel that we never got. She's like, why don't we just break it into, why don't we just divide it into five?
I was like, yeah.
And the entire army is rushing up at the five of them.
It was pretty good. Again, we mentioned Devin Aoki a couple of times. She is a half-sister to DJ Steve Aoki. I mean, worldwide, global sensation that he is. Seems like he has a permanent residency in Vegas. What was interesting about her being related to him is that Junkie XL, with one of his first scores here, Tom Holkenberg, does the score in this. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's more in line with the electronic music that he became famous for as Junkie XL. But he still maintains the Junkie XL thing, even through all the Godzilla movies he's done recently, Deadpool. He's like, so he's kind of vibing and keeping that name. He's not one of those people that's changing their name. Now he's not doing, now he's doing full orchestra pieces. Now he's still Junkie XL. But his score's great, dude. Like, speaking very much in that vibe of video game / Fast and the Furious, because BT did the score for the first Fast and the Furious. So that's the same thing was happening here. Hollywood was kind of into hiring DJs, electronic musicians to score these things. And they fit perfectly, just fine. But Junkie, like I said, it's one of his first things. And being a DJ, an electronic musician, how I can just get there. Those quick video game bites, just little melodic chunks and it's perfect. He was a perfect choice for it. It was a great job.
All the music cues worked perfect. They were thoughtful. They were smart. They were fun. Each one of them works exactly the way you'd want it to work and when you'd want it to work. I mean, this movie seems, it's so funny. Like there is a Dimension Extreme Blu-ray of this that came out in 2010, but I think it's out of print. I don't know if there are any extras on it, but this is the kind of movie I think I do own it actually. I don't think I ever went and looked, but I think I do own this. I think I'm pretty sure I bought this for that reason, because I wanted to see if there were any extras and stuff. And I think maybe there's just some minuscule stuff on it. I'd have to go look for it. It doesn't list it on Amazon. But it really is a movie that I was kind of sad that we never got a sequel to. But I mean, you know, I don't know what they would have done. Would we follow the girls or would we just start over? You know, I don't know enough about the game to really know, you know, how they would have warranted it. But, you know, and it doesn't overstay its welcome either. That's the other thing. The movie's, it's just the right length.
Yeah.
It's wrapped up neatly and kind of silly. Dude, the way that Eric Roberts meets his demise is pretty spectacular.
Yeah. It's the right amount of corn.
Yeah, totally. Right. Like,
and the way he goes, that was pretty clean. It was pretty clean.
Yeah, it looked good.
That kind of gag usually can fall pretty flat and look fake.
Yeah, it could go Ghost Rider real easy. Yeah.
There, it can a little sneak into what
it could go Ghost Rider real easy, but it doesn't. Or it could go Blade. It could go OG Blade.
Oh yeah, I gotta say this. If this is an episode, I'm probably not, because it's not relative. I mean, it's relative to our conversation, but watching the deleted scenes on the first Blade, on what they changed for the Blood God, what it was. If you think what came out in the theater was bad,
oh yeah, man, yeah, no, I've seen that, and yeah, I will take the theater. I will take the theater and never complain again.
But that, you don't get any of that here. Everything works here. Granted, we're talking about several years afterwards, but everybody learned from their mistakes. And actually, let's kind of continue the conversation. How often have we been saying we put a little asterisk, or we feel like you could copy and paste this some kind of derivative of what we're saying, right, I'm about to say right now, from other movies around this time. This movie suffers from effects that came out in that time frame.
This one doesn't.
No, nope. Not at all.
I was just going to say that the one thing about this movie, it doesn't feel like you're watching a movie from 2006. Yeah, you know, like in a bad way. The only reason that for me, the only thing that marks it as 2006 is they would never make this movie now. Like,
no,
we wouldn't get this version of it.
You wouldn't even get this movie 10 years ago.
No, they'd just be too afraid of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, this movie, you know, this is from a time that wasn't long enough,
right?
But just long enough to get several of this type. I mean, dude, there's a world. I look at the cover of this thing and I'm like, God, dude, if they would have only made Doc Savage around the same time they made this, and let Corey Yuen and the people involved, Paul W.S. Anderson, let them give me the 2006 version of Doc Savage.
Because let me say this. I know not everybody is a fan of Paul W.C. Anderson, and for the most part, I can leave him or take him depending on the film. But this guy,
Event Horizon.
He gets lumped in with U Bull, and that's really not fair.
No, not even close.
But he does. And it's not fair. Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know why people would do that. I mean, he obviously, you know, he is a guy who knows video games, and whatever you want to say about the Resident Evil franchise, I don't feel like any of those movies are embarrassingly bad when you watch them. I mean, to me, some of them are better than others.
Oh yeah.
But none of them are terrible. None of them are unwatchable. Where a Uwe Boll movie, there's not one that is watchable.
Not one. And Resident Evil, the Resident Evil series is very much like the Fast and the Furious series.
Yeah.
The totally. Second movie sucks.
Yep.
It's awful. And the rest of it is fun.
Yes. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
His career. I mean, I just look at Jamie Presley in this cowboy hat and, you know, and just look at that gang, the gang behind her. And I'm just like, man, what a crazy world. What's funny too is like, she's front and center on the cover. And I think that's because she's probably the most well-known at the time.
Yeah. And it depends on what cover you see, because when you look at the main one,
the main poster, Devin, she's front and center.
Yeah.
But when Dimension Extreme put the on disc, they changed that cover up and you get Jamie Priestley standing there with her Crocodile Dundee cowboy hat on, slinging double machetes.
Right. So this one too, right? The main one, it's on the Wikipedia page. Now, does Devin Aoki ever use a samurai sword? No, because they want you to feel like she's deadly little Miho, like from Sin City, because that's her main weapon.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. This thing's on Tubi. You're not surprised that it's on Tubi. The stream quality is fantastic. It looks really good. We got that rad glitch where it goes black for a moment. I never got one single ad the whole time I watched the movie.
Me neither.
I think there's something to do with when the movies came out. I'm finding movies that are older than 15 years old. We're not getting the actual ads. So, and who knows? It's probably a frequency in which something gets watched that they're going to start throwing the algorithm at you.
Right.
But if you like video games and you like fighting games, this is just a live action fighting game. It's never embarrassing. It's because it gets the tone right, because the DOA games are goofy like this.
Yes, totally.
It never takes them too seriously. The last Mortal Kombat I actually liked.
No, because I did too. When I said that, I meant the early stuff, like, you know.
Right. The one that directed by Paul W. Sanderson.
Or Street Fighter with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And that one's a mess. That's why I brought it up earlier, where you convolute it with a story and it doesn't really know what it is. This movie knows what it is. It never wavers from that.
No.
Everybody's on the same page. Nobody seems lost.
Nope.
No.
Everybody knows what they're doing, and they're everyone's having a blast, and it's very obvious from the finished product.
Would you see a lot though with 2B type movies where they're like this? Like a lot of what we got last March too.
Yeah,
was that when people get brought in at the last minute, somebody got hurt in a fight sequence or something like that, where you can clearly see the double that has done all the stunts already that they can't afford to reshoot. Doesn't quite match the person that's in the speaking scenes. You don't get that with this. Everybody, no. Like I said, it has something that, again, the choices aren't just because they're easy on the eyes individuals, male and female. Everybody's capable. Everybody's athletic. Everybody clearly plays it. I mean, Corey Young is not going to have an unsafe set when it comes to any of the fight sequences, any of the choreography, any of those, especially the wire work.
Yeah.
And it plays perfectly. I think that's one of the reasons too. I mentioned that super smooth wire work. Sometimes you can tell when people kind of coming in for a landing where the ratchet kind of slows down too fast and you kind of get this weird, not so smooth landing or takeoff or whatever it is. There is something about this where everybody is comfortable being in the harnesses and on the cables. Nobody feels uncomfortable, because when you're uncomfortable, that's when it doesn't look right.
Right.
Yeah, nobody came in here. Nobody got replaced.
Right, exactly. So, no, everybody, you know, it looks like everybody made it, you know, through the movie relatively unscathed. I'm sure there's some bumps and bruises because it's just what happens. But, you know, I don't see any ratchet jerks. I don't see any, like, I don't see clothes being tugged. I don't see any wires anywhere in this movie. It's, you know, it's super slick. It's super fun. It's entertaining. You know, when it was over, I didn't want it to be over. I rewound the end of it like four times so I could watch that glorious fight between with Eric Roberts, because it is that good.
Yeah. I think probably the fun, this thing that kind of describes the movie to a T. One of the other, I forget which one of the fighters is hiding out in Jamie Presley's room.
Oh, the guy who looks like Guile from...
No, it was one of the girls.
Oh.
When they're
in bed together and then Kevin Nash comes in. Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's hiding now.
It's Christy. Yeah, and they're just sleeping together, but we're not sleeping together, Dad.
Yeah, Dad gets alerted that he has to fight his daughter and he comes there. Oh, okay. Mr. Understanding. Oh, my daughter's into girls. Cool. All right. Well, we'll fight tomorrow, sweetheart. Have a good night. And that's when we get that water fight later on.
Right.
That, I mean, really is the tone of the entire movie. It's super silly.
It is. It knows what it is. That's the thing about it. This movie knows what it is, and it doesn't try to be, you know, it never takes itself serious, which is, you know, it's what makes it great.
Yep.
So, hey, man, what a way to start this, right?
Yeah.
We have nowhere to go but down from here, I guarantee
it. We were chuckling about, like, going, oh, man, this is a great start. And we're like, the only thing that was perfect about it was the movie that it gave to us, and which is...
Yeah.
Because we did Eye of the Tiger last year. Eye of the Tiger was just full of question marks.
Eye of the Tiger was... There was a reason why we hadn't seen Eye of the Tiger in 30-plus years. Right. There's a reason why it wasn't available for 25-plus years. Until streaming became, they're like, we got to stream everything. Oh, fuck, here, put this in Cyclone. And here's a whole bunch of Billy Dee Williams, all these movies you thought you'd never see again.
Yeah.
Here they are. What was the one? What's the one with, God, there's that terrible movie, Cave Girl.
Oh.
All those Crown International movies from the 80s.
Yes.
all those things. Streaming. Thank you, streaming. They're all on Tubi.
Yeah, because Cave Girl was...
Daniel Roebuck is the only person I recognize in the whole movie.
The female, though.
Yeah.
Cynthia Thompson, right?
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, funny. Yeah, it's funny because I remember the box. I remember Daniel Roebuck is the archaeologist.
Yeah, Daniel used to come into our video store all the time. You know what, that when we have a... that's back when he was on Matlock.
Right.
So that when he used to come in the store all the time.
Yep.
And then I would talk his ear off about River's Edge when he came in.
Yeah, dude, that's what I was going to say. He's in fucking one of my favorite movies of all, two of them actually, between River's Edge and Dudes.
Yeah, Dudes is great.
And then Disorganized Crime, I'll throw in there too.
Sure. It's a good start for a totally different way than it was last year. I said, we're both looking at the next one. We're like, oh man. I look at that, I'm like, well, you can only go up from there.
Right. This is, I don't know. We'll see where the bots take us, man. We'll see.
Cool. So you want to follow the show on the socials, you can follow us at Karate Pod on Twitter, Insta, and Letterboxd. If you want to follow Corey on Letterboxd, it's Corey_Culp. And on Instagram is Culprit97. And if you want to follow some other socials, another linkage, you can look at the bottom of our episode show notes under Karate in the Garage linkage, and you'll find everything there.
If you'd like to follow me on Instagram, I'm at rockandroller33. If you'd like to follow me on Letterboxd, I'm at Tom Cody on Letterboxd. If you'd like to follow me at Blue Sky, it's the real John Ladd at Blue Sky.